かはんにゃはらみたしんぎょう。
Thank you for joining the Zen Care Podcast. These recorded Dharma talks are given freely to our community in the heart of New York City, which we are honored to now share with you. New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care is dedicated to transforming the nature of care through contemplative practice by meeting illness, aging, and death with compassion and wisdom. Learn about us at zencare.org.
Today is an auspicious day, and this month marks the 15th year of Mary Sumita's death. None of you are going to know who Mary Sumita is. There was a photograph of her on the altar for the longest time, for 10 years actually. Not sure where it is. Now, she was one of the many children in the internment camps during the Second World War. She was Japanese, of Japanese parents, and was imprisoned in the internment camps. This little girl, right? For reasons that were pretty much incorrect. I'm trying to think of a nice word, but interned. When the Japanese were liberated, should we say, Mary and her parents moved back to Los Angeles, where most of the temples had been appropriated, should we say, by the Americans. So it was a really, really difficult times for those folks going not only to Los Angeles, but all over the country. The priests in these temples were the first to be arrested, to be taken out of their homes. They were seen as the instigators, whatever it was. She was a longtime practitioner of Kodo Sawaki, up until 1965 when he died. She moved to New York in the 70s. She was kind of a rebel, you know, little Japanese lady, kind of a rebel. She was like, I'm not sticking around here. So she came to New York City. And she actually worked in one of the big ad agencies until she retired. So she was there for some 40 years, 30 years. And I met Mary, I'm trying to not use her name. I met Mary during my chaplaincy training days, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. She was at a hospice, on a hospice unit in a hospital overlooked at Central Park, on Central Park, west overlooking Central Park. She had dementia. Was living with lung cancer that had metastasized throughout her body. During one of my visits, one of the aides told me that she'd been staring out of the window for weeks, just staring out of the window. You know, not speaking, just staring out of the window all day. And I was the only visitor she would get. She was never married and had no children. And she had one niece who lived in Paris. And so she was basically alone, apart from the staff, who loved her diminutive ways, her like just presence. As I said, this tiny lady. just this tiny, tiny lady with this enormous presence. And on the day that the aide told me that Mary had spent most of her time looking out of the window, I asked her, "What is it that you're seeing out there?" And she said, "I'm looking out at the beautiful, beautiful park where my apartment used to be." In her dementia, she was certain that she had an apartment right next to the reservoir in Central Park. That's where she lived, in her little one bedroom. It was almost like, did anybody see the movie Winter, Spring, Summer, Fall? It's a beautiful, beautiful Japanese movie. And it's, somebody living in the, I'm not sure if it was a priest now, I can't remember, a priest, I think, living in the middle of this big lake and this little hut that he had built. And people would deliver food to him back and forth across the reservoir, the lake. So it kind of reminded me of that. There she was every day overlooking the park, missing her house on the reservoir. So her niece would call once a week to check in, check up on her. I became this kind of conduit for the niece. And over the months, at the beginning of my relationship with Mary, we would go down to the main floor to the kind of cafeteria, and she would sit here on one side of the table, I would sit on the other side of the table, and there were no conversations, just looking at each other. And then one day I said to her, "What are you thinking?" She said, "My mind is clear." I said, Wow. She just bowed. When she died, her niece came over from Paris to be with her. And she was here for the funeral and went back to Paris. It was difficult for her to come back to New York, to the States, because of her own commitments in Paris. And she asked if I would take care of Mary's ashes. And over time, Mary had said, "I want to die in my apartment, in my house. That's where I want to die. I don't care what happens after that." But being a Buddhist, she wanted to be cremated, and she wanted her ashes scattered in Central Park, of course. So her niece asked, "Would we do that? Would we collect the ashes and take them to Central Park?" So Koshin and I did that. I remember collecting the ashes from the crematorium or the funeral home and thinking how heavy this was. I mean, if anyone's ever collected ashes, you realize how heavy this box is. And just such a privilege to be able to do this. And so Koshin and I went to the reservoir and walked around the reservoir. Of course, you're not supposed to deposit ashes in Central Park. So we're like looking around, it's like. And then we came to Mary's apartment, you know, whatever that was, whatever it looked like, and bowed. The last of the ashes. Such a beautiful, beautiful moment in my life. So this afternoon, we will begin to delve into the precepts, 16 Buddhist precepts that we work with, the 16 precepts that we work with. So that'll be over the next 10 months. the 16 precepts of vows. Don't take vows in the wrong way. Don't take vows in the way that's not intended here. It's not any Judeo-Christian kind of I vow to, I must. These are guidelines for our life. These precepts originate with Shakyamuni Buddha. During his lifetime. And they were passed down from Shakyamuni to Mahakashyapa, to Ananda, generation by generation by generation. 87 generations now, I think. Yes, 87 generations. Are you listening to me? years I've lived with this one, and he still doesn't listen to me. I can't hear. Ehe Dogen created the 16 Bodhisattva precepts we use today almost 8 centuries ago. Imagine. This is what we're working with today, the same precepts. Today, our understanding of the precepts is guided by the Buddhist principles of impermanence, no self, arising out of our deepest wisdom and compassion. The precepts provide foundation of how we relate to others and function in the world. I think that's one of the most important moments there. How we function in the world to ourselves and others. Not seeing the other as other. So Dylan's over there, he's another person, but I'm not othering Dylan by not being being interconnected. We're all interconnected. And when we don't see that, we're seeing someone as other. I'm seeing Eric as other. I don't know Eric. Not me, I'm not him. Boom. As opposed to, we're both in this world. We're both interconnected. Each morning, on retreat, and in Zen temples throughout the world, we chant the verse of atonement, which actually we chanted yesterday for our Zazen Kai, our half-day sit. Which really speaks to, not defaming the precepts. Noticing how we have maybe not act accordingly in life with the precepts. And for those of you who don't recognize or know this chant, you're about to get it. So maybe I can have a little intro. Sure. All evil karma. This is my part. No, this is just me. It's my talk. Just me. This is Mama's big moment. Don't break the precept by stealing it away from me. Let's try that again. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. That is usually chanted three times, but I'll save you there for eardrums. As I said, the precepts are not rules, they're guidelines. They're guidelines to show us, to help us, to notice how it is we break the precepts on a daily basis, the breaking the precepts. Well, I should say, I am breaking the precepts. Do not kill, do not steal, do not lie, do not elevate oneself above others, and so on. Do not defame the three treasures, Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. Recognizing the one body that we all are, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. When I break a precept, when I break a precept of my own, I'm breaking the precept for all of you. Because when we are the one body. Do not kill. We are doing this all the time, killing. We work with the precepts from three perspectives. The literal, do not kill. The relational, when is it appropriate? If a poisonous snake is heading towards you, and that bite will kill you, maybe we take the life, depending on what our values are. Oh yeah, there's a snake, I'm gonna die. Do I want that? To express gratitude. Don't take anything for granted. See everything as a gift, whatever that looks like. It's a glorious day, for instance. This amazing arrangement of flowers, this ikebana on the altar, these white chrysanthemums. And the fact that you have a roof over your head, you have food in your stomach, money in your pocket. I was walking down the street again on 23rd Street, and again was met by three people, unhoused people, three unhoused men asking for money. There's more and more and more of that happening, especially on 23rd Street for whatever reason. And I carry $1 with me to hand to someone. And the other $2 that I don't have, simply smile. Oh, I have this great story from yesterday. I leave our apartment on 24th Street. You know those the folks that collect the tins and the bottles and everything for their 5 cent redemption? There's usually big bags of them. And there was this one man who was standing there, you know, he suntan, t-shirt, shorts, glasses. I looked over and I said, hey, good morning. He's like, good morning. He said, whatever you think I'm doing is what I'm doing. You may think all sorts of things about me for collecting these bottles and these cans. I'm okay with it. It's like, wow, I'm okay with it. It's beautiful. I digressed there, not unusual for me. Maybe not so much, but I'm walking on 23rd Street, giving one man money, not being able to give the other two guys money, maybe able to smile. Good morning. Not taking them for granted and giving the gift Thank you. Reciprocation. A firm life. Sword, do not kill. A firm life in all its many forms. Maintain life. Declare life. And of course, there are many, many ways in which we kill inadvertently. Walking on the street, treading on spiders. Some would say even picking flowers. Picking fruit off trees. Form of killing. The Jains, as you probably know, or may not know, but they're walking in the forest, they have someone in front of them just brushing away the insects so they don't tread on them and kill them. And they can only eat whatever's fallen to the ground, whatever's already died. That's what they can pick and that's what they can eat. And they wear these masks so as not to breathe in microbes, so to not kill in any way, shape or form. It's a little, you know, a little much. You wouldn't survive in New York or anywhere else if we were, unless we were Jains. I'm closing this now, and I can see that Yoshin is about to kill my conversation by picking up the stick. She's ready to bang that drum. She's like, enough of you now. Right, Yoshin? Excellent. Shiki shiki soku ze kuku soku ze shiki ju song yo shiki yakubu.